Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, cause it's root for the home team. They don't win, it's a shame, cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
Sorry, just reading a news flash. We've got breaking news. It turns out 2020 sucks. COVID, civil unrest, divided politics, fires, hurricanes, dogs and cats, living together, mass hysteria. We all know that it sucks. It sucks for about the last 6 months at least for some of us fans of certain baseball teams since January. But you know, it sucked, and there's a lot of darkness ahead when it comes to covering the sport of baseball, particularly the part of the sport that this show is mostly focused on. So for this opening, I'm not going to focus on it, at least not right away. First things first, I want to send out a hearty congratulations to Cameron Doherty and at Dodgers News 88. I don't use his name. We use his Twitter handle, but I'm going to give them a hearty congratulations because first, the Dodgers made the playoffs again for something like the 800th year in a row. So congratulations to you guys. Congrats on the Lakers making the Western Conference Finals. You know, I honestly give them sincere congratulations because, again, it's been awful this year, and both sports have been weird, and there's been so much going on and kind of wrapped around and penetrating the sports world that if friends of mine can take a little bit of a break from what has been, again, a pretty awful year, then we are here to celebrate that and we're here to congratulate them. And in that spirit, we're also going to congratulate friends of the show, Bailey Edinburgh, who you might remember was she's a native of Dallas by Oklahoma State University, who I met in North Dakota. And then Tyler Stamm, GM of the Sugarland Skeeters, is going to be on this episode. But a hearty congratulations to them. They're both Dallas Stars fans. So I think it's sort of cool that the state of Texas is in hockey. I do also want to then apologize to the St. Louis Blues and to Scott McIntyre because I swore my allegiance to the St. Louis Blues. You might remember that my allegiance was up for sale. They made the best bid and then promptly lost in the playoffs. So I feel like that's partially my responsibility and my fault, and I'm sorry. But you know, not all the sports news is great. And one of the things I just want to point out as we kind of further our discussions of the future of minor league baseball, the organization known as the MILB. So a weird thing happened the other day that the spring training schedule was released for Major League Baseball. And for many of the listeners of this show and friends of mine, that was exciting. One of the things that I noticed and a few other people noticed that we still don't have a minor league schedule for 2021. So we have a major league schedule. We have a major league spring training schedule. We have no minor league schedule. And the fact is because MLB, their tactic for this is that they're going to run the clock out on the MILB. And look, it's anything but noble to do that. It is actually the definition of shameful. And for those of you who don't care, imagine that, you know, you have a friend or you or a spouse or a family member has a job that the job is actively hiring yours or your friends or whoever's replacement while you're still employed and haven't been told about your future. Because that is what's happening. The minor league front office is essentially telling their employees to start looking for new gigs, even though they haven't actually been told they lost the current one they have. The writing is on the wall. And to me, I think it's gross on the part of the MLB because look, Major League Baseball has all the power in the situation. I'm not even saying they shouldn't. They are their players. They are allowed to do whatever they want to. But it seems like if you have the power, maybe use it and be upfront and say, look, listen, we're not going to continue negotiating the player development contract. We're going to let it expire. We are going to run MILB the way we want to run it, and at least be upfront and tell them instead of pretending to negotiate, letting things leak. And while you're doing that, essentially leaving all these people who have really worked really hard for a sport, leave them in the wind. And, you know, we saw that with President O'Connor resigning from MILB and friends that we have, friends of the show that really don't know what their future is going to be. And I'm not saying that they should, that MLB needs to make sure that they necessarily put their own interest second. But if you have all the power and there's nothing MILB can do, isn't it at least a gesture of good faith and maybe being a little compassionate by just telling them what your intentions are? But we do have a good show for you today. Like I said, Tyler Stan from the Sugarland Skeeters are here to wrap up the Constellation Energy League. Andy's here to talk a little bit about the Astros and their pitching staff. And Scott McIntyre here to discuss the merits or lack thereof of expanded playoffs beyond 2020. So stay with us.
And now the Big League Chew, an eye on the majors, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
All right, so we are here on the Big League Chew, and we're going to talk a little bit about, Scott, Manfred. He lets things out, and he sounds very much like our president when he says, well, a lot of people told me, and those people are never really identified. And just like he said last week, a lot of people really like the runner at second base, and I'd like to know who. He did let out that a lot of people are telling him that they love the expanded playoffs. And I know that you and I have a bit more liberal view on it than some sort of traditionalists. But I wanted your thoughts on 16 teams in a 30-team league starting in 2021.
Well, you've just about got the same thing in other American sports. The NBA, what, eight per side. So it's not without precedent, because the NBA used to have fewer teams. So that was their half the leagues getting in into the postseason. The NFL's not far away from that either. I think 12 out of 30. This would be the greater than the majority getting in. You know, there's a part of me that says, yes, it goes against tradition, but I can make a strong argument for this. I kind of have on the show before. If you're not going to force a salary cap on these teams, the only way to spread the field and really make it even for some of these smaller market teams, I think, is to expand the playoffs to where, yeah, you just snuck in. Maybe your record was at 500 or just under that, but you made some moves at the trade deadline to get there, and now you're a force in the playoffs. That is a way to compete, as far as markets go, with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and the Cards.
I will say this too, this was years ago I heard this, but I like Colin Cowherd. I think for the most part, Colin Cowherd makes pretty good takes. And he did point out that baseball had the smallest ratio of regular season games to playoff games. Yeah. And, you know, and I get that part of the baseball is the grind, and we're seeing it now, right? Like, we're seeing a Cardinals team struggle and an Astros team struggle. And if this was a 6-month season, it's a thing you get through as opposed to defining a season. One of the biggest things that people have pointed out, and I wanted your take on this part of it, 16 teams get in. Will that prevent teams from really trying to be competitive because they know they might luck into a spot?
Yeah, but I think you're seeing teams that are in a mindset right now where they're just trying to be competitive every fifth year. And the Royals and the Tigers are doing that too. So if I was a fan of a small market team, if I was a fan of one of these teams that struggles regularly, right? Do I want to see my team try to be competitive every fifth year, or do I want to see them try to sneak into the playoffs every year? Man, I'm a Razorback fan, right? Which way do I lean? Right back here. 500 in a bowl game is what we live off of some years, right? Yeah. We would love that. We fire coaches if they can't do it every third year. So yes, I would absolutely love, if I'm a small market teams fan, I want to see my guys maybe get into the playoffs, because every once in a while they're going to knock off Goliath, and I'm going to wear that around with pride all the time. Yeah. Okay. We got knocked out of the ALCS, but you know what? We beat the Yankees, and then we went and beat the Dodgers. And okay, yeah, we lost to the White Sox, and they went to the World Series, but we knocked off the two Goliaths. I think there's a big win in that. I also think that if baseball wants to survive, competitively survive in this with a younger market, you've got to be more exciting. Well, the game itself, well, they've tried everything they can. Oh, we're going to make it more exciting. We're going to institute a pitch clock. And we're going to only 5 visits per game to the mound. That doesn't work. It's not in game. The in game itself has not been broken. I don't like the runner on second base. Can't stand it.
Yeah.
Do I think that 7 inning doubleheaders may be something they do in the future? Yeah. I hope not 3 in a week like the Cardinals are having to do this week.
But honestly, if it was a scheduled Saturday doubleheader, 7 innings apiece, I'm actually in for that. Like, I would make it a thing.
I grew up with that in Arkansas. So we had blue laws. You could not play baseball on Sunday. But the Arkansas Travelers, as part of the Texas League, they had to stick to the schedule that everybody else in Mississippi or Texas was running. So we had Saturday night, 7 inning doubleheaders.
Yeah.
I think the games couldn't go past 2 in the morning or something. But I was used to that. You know, last night, interesting that we're talking about this, because last night, Adam Wainwright threw 7 innings and got the win against Milwaukee. And afterwards he says, man, that was just, it was a roller coaster of a game. I felt like it was a real complete game. And they said, well, it is. And he's like, what, really? Wow. That really counts as a 7 innings. I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it. But yeah, I think the last 2 innings of a game are make or break, whether those last 2 innings are the 6th and 7th, the 8th or 9th, or the 19th and 20th, right? I don't like the runner at second base. I think that's good for this year. I understand it. I hope it's something we lose in the future. Yeah. A reduced schedule with an expanded number of playoffs? Yeah, I totally see that, because, again, as we've talked about before, there's a fascination in American sports about playoffs, right? Yeah. Playoffs. Jim Mora, playoffs. Playoffs are the thing that generates excitement. It gets people talking. They go back and forth. Whereas other league, you know, they play football around the world, soccer, football around the world. They don't have playoffs. They don't, you know, the league is the league. When you finish your last game, you finish. You either finish at top of the table or you don't.
Yeah.
We don't do that in the States. So, or else the Seattle Mariners would have been champions a few years ago. And that's just, that's how it goes. Let's generate excitement. If you're going to have to do that, well, this may be a good idea for Manfred. Knock it down to 144 games and give yourself that extra time in September. September call-ups were the only thing that were exciting about September for these lower teams anyway. That's already gone. That's a thing of the past. So,
yeah.
Well, maybe it's 130-game schedule. I don't know. I don't know the number, but if they're going to expand the playoffs, they're going to have to reduce the number of games and I'm okay with that.
I've seen 155 presented, with some of those being those scheduled 7 inning doubleheaders that we talked about. And I think a couple of things to your point. One, there's nothing more American than the little guy getting a shot, which is why I think we love that. And if anybody doesn't believe that Oakland might not have won one of those wild card games if it had been a 3-game series instead of 1 game, weren't watching the Oakland A's as closely as you or I or Stu Clary. No one watches as close as Stu Clary. But Billy Bean doesn't watch as close as Stu Clary. But I think that's one thing. But I also think, we talk about when you add the DH, you take away a lot of the strategy from a manager. But now if you're managing 2 7 inning doubleheaders, managing a pitching staff, you bring some strategy back into it.
Well, I'll tell you, so for me, I'm very familiar with a 7 inning doubleheader now, being a Cardinals fan, after going 16 days without games. It's really truly nuts when you think about that. You're dealing with a team that had 2 games on a Monday, 1 on a Tuesday, 2 more on a Wednesday, 1 on a Thursday, 8 games in 5 days. Yeah. Very familiar. Does tax a, It does tax a pitching staff. It depends on how much they expand the roster, though, right? If you're still going to keep 28 players, there's still less work to do. There's going to be less work to do with a DH to manage your pitching staff, regardless of how you look at it. But there's still definitely work to be done. Also, American League and National League pretty much – since the DH, they have pretty much split the World Series, right? I mean, I don't think anybody's saying, oh, well, this side always wins. Yeah. So there's a certain amount of strategy that you've still got to do in the game of baseball, and there's a certain amount of luck. I watched the Cardinals hit three balls out of the park that were fouled by about that much that cost them a couple of games.
Yeah.
It happens. So I would love to be a manager and just have to work with the DH. I think there's less that you have to worry about. I also think that coupling that with the minimum of three batters faced, that also reduces the lefty righty stuff that you're trying to figure out or bring this guy in just to get one batter. There's less strategy that's taken out of already. There's still going to be plenty of areas for managers to have to worry about. Like the other night when Yachty got hit on the arm by Ryan Braun's bat, and I do believe it was an accident. But as Yachty's walking it off and Schultz over there, somebody in the Brewers dugout said, you know, quit being a little bitch. Mike Schultz kind of got a little offended by that. And that's why he sat out game two of the doubleheader last night.
Yeah, we saw Correa take a foul ball off his shin in both Andy Tomchess, and I thought he was dead. He played the next day, but I was like, oh, he's dead. You know, we're up against it, but I want you to give me 90 seconds on – you know, you talked about part of that it seems like Major League Baseball is digging its own hole, trying to fix problems that aren't there. When are they going to realize that the problems that we have with the game are that they've created a true outcome sport where the ball's either in the catcher's mitt or out of the ballpark and there's nothing in the middle, bring back hit and runs, bring back stolen bases. When are they going to realize that that's the way you make your game more interesting again?
I think whenever guys are rewarded for doing those types of things in their contract, really it always comes back down to money. Yeah. And right now hitting the long ball, you know, chicks dig the long ball and guys are getting paid for that. That's the long and the short of it. So I think it will always come back down to money. I'll also be interested if they reduce these contracts to see if they reduce the length of the season, if they also in turn reduce some of the amounts of the contracts. We'll see. The owners play hardball like that, like we saw trying to get a baseball season started this year. But I think it'll come back down to the money. Ratings are going to be what ratings are going to be.
Okay. All right, Scott. Well, we'll be back next week with some more Big League Chew. And hopefully we'll have a little bit more clarification on this minor league baseball system. But also, before we leave, off that jersey.
Dude, I mean, talking about Big League Chew, well, I'll be nibbling on sponge cake and watching the sun bake all of these tourists covered with oil. Thanks to the Skeeters, and thanks to you for making sure I got hooked up with this very sweet Buffett jersey from Sugarland. So this pirate is looking at 50, not 40, but that's as cool as I can. I don't know. I'm going to go eat a cheeseburger in paradise. Like, I haven't had enough of those.
Go, go Astros, a focus on H-Town Hardball.
After we just came off an amazing National Lampoon's European Vacation reference, we are back here on Go, Go Astros with Andy Tomchessen. Andy, we'll be pigs.
I mean, we will, especially when it comes to a playoff rotation if we get there.
Right. I want to talk real quick. We're recording this on Thursday, last night. I'm less ready to declare Lance McCullers back and more probably a beneficiary of the same strike zone that allowed a guy with an 8 ERA to essentially shut the Astros out for 8 2/3. What did you see out of Lance last night? Do you feel like he's what we expect him to be, or is it a little smoke and mirrors?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think he's as bad as he's looked sometimes this year, and I don't think he's as good as he looked sometimes this year. It kind of just is what he is. And it's a guy who's coming off of Tommy John surgery, so this isn't supposed to be the year he's at the sharpest and at the peak of his career. You saw that in 2018 before he got hurt, where up until the All-Star break when he started feeling the elbow issues, he was among league leaders in wins, ERA, strikeouts, not allowing walks, very, very sharp. He's a guy who's working his way back. I think it benefited certainly from the ridiculous strike zone, even to the point where Jeff Blum called it out with graphics. That won't mean a lot to non-Astros fans. Jeff Blum won't say a negative thing about an umpire to save his life.
He's afraid he's going to get ejected. That's why.
Yeah. And even he was kind of railing on it, and they showed a graphic, I think, in the sixth inning, and there were as many called strikes out of the zone as there were in the zone, according to PitchTrack. I think the other thing is McCullers is super comfortable at home, and he pitches really, really well there. His issues this year haven't been pitching in Minute Maid Park. They've been pitching anywhere else but Minute Maid Park, which – if you're looking at what the playoffs could potentially look like, doesn't look great for the Astros if you expect him to participate.
Okay, so let's take a look at real quick the bullpen. The last four games, it's looked better. If that's the Josh James we're getting, who didn't really benefit from the low strike zone because he's really in the zone in the heart of the plate with just velocity. If that's the Josh James we're going to get based on his last two outings, how does that make you feel about the bullpen going forward?
I think it's weird because I think we have pieces to the bullpen. And last night, notwithstanding, because Ryan Pressly shouldn't have taken that loss because Yuli Gurriel shouldn't have committed that error.
Yeah.
He did, and it happened. And I think everybody knows, I think Ryan Pressly even knows, not disparaging him, he's not a closer. The mentality's not there. He's an incredible setup guy.
Yeah.
Great eighth inning guy. And in a pinch, you go to him, but he's not Roberto Osuna. And I think there is a difference, and I don't know how you quantify it. I don't think you can quantify it between somebody who is a good relief pitcher and somebody who has the mentality of being a closer. And Presley's just not that guy. Maybe he gets there someday, but I don't think you develop that. I think you have it or you don't. Osuna, right, wrong, or indifferent about him, he had that mentality. The bullpen as a whole is interesting because, like I said, I think you have pieces. I think Josh James, if he stops trying to be acute and stops trying to throw four different pitches and concentrates on, I have a 99-mile-an-hour fastball and then I can change speed with a slider or a changeup and get you out, looks a lot better than Josh James as a starter. I think Anoli Paredes has been a godsend for us this year. I think Brooks Raley has been a great find for
Nate
Click off the scrap heap.
But all those people bitching at Click for not making a deal, he did make a deal. And
right.
That deal he made is performing better than a lot of pitchers who have changed teams.
I think you even have a callback to the old Luno days of if Jeff Luno asked for a guy off your roster that you've never heard of, don't give it to him. Andre Scrub might be one of our best relievers that we have this year. The issue I have with our bullpen is we have a manager who doesn't know how to use a bullpen. And I was looking real briefly I won't count Luis Garcia because I think right now he's probably our fifth starter and probably is going to have to pitch on Saturday because we need a fifth starter. And he's the last person who hasn't pitched in 8 days. It'll be 10 days by that point. But you look at Brad Peacock, hasn't pitched in six days going into the Thursday night game. Andre Scrub hasn't pitched in 6 days. Brandon Belak hasn't pitched in 6 days. Christian Javier hasn't pitched in 3 days, but before that he hadn't pitched in 6 days. So he's had one appearance in almost 10 days. Cy Snead, same thing, one appearance in 10 days. And then you've got Raley, James, Paredes, and Pressly who've pitched a lot, but even Paredes who pitched last night against the Rangers hadn't pitched in 7 days.
Yeah.
You can't do that, especially to young guys, and expect them to come in and be effective. And that's what you've seen is these really up and down performances. And I just don't see Dusty magically getting better at that just because it's now October. That's the big concern from a pitching standpoint. I think our starters are capable. And we can talk a little bit about rotation. I don't know who the fifth starter is right now. I guess all of us want it to be Justin Verlander. But you know, to the reference we made at the beginning, it's kind of a pig and a poke. How do you count on a guy, no matter what his legacy is, and he is absolutely a first ballot all-star type of guy, who has not he's pitched one game. He might get a game the last week of September with the hopes that he can go 5 days later in the playoffs. Well, 5 days later after the last week of September, we might not be playing anymore.
Right.
Just based on how the calendar is going to work.
You bring up this the excellent point, though, and I actually almost messaged you this last night when Paredes came in, or maybe I did. I was in such a frustrating game to watch.
We were both pretty irritated last night.
Yeah, it was a pretty irritating game to watch, in part because, look, it was if you want to talk about the strike zone, like you said, it was, and I was talking to my Ranger buddy, Ivan, who's been on the show a bunch, and he said the same thing. He knocked on the, he said, I love a pitcher's duel, but that strike zone was ridiculous. And now you got guys swinging out of the zone, pounding the ball into the ground. I mean, they were, everybody's shocked. Look at all these ground ball outs are getting right because they can't trust the strike zone. When Paredes came in, my first thought was, I haven't seen him pitch in forever. And then they said, yeah, it had been a week. And you're right. How can you, particularly with young guys, get them used to training to be bullpen arms if you don't use them as bullpen arms?
I don't know that you can. And I think that's Dusty does not have a great reputation, even when he was on top of his game. And I think any Astros fan who's being honest would tell you he's not at the top of his game right now. He did show some emotion. I think he either stumbled and braced himself or he hit the rail when Tucker got caught stealing last night. I'm going to go with he hit the rail because of anger, not because he was stumbling because he has osteoporosis. He doesn't manage a bullpen well, and he doesn't know how to manage a bullpen. And I think this is a systemic or endemic issue with position players who never had to deal with pitchers as players that don't understand how it works. I think there's a reason you see that your best managers tend to be catchers because they've had to deal with both sides of the baseball game. It's weird. I mean, what do you do coming into the playoffs with Eloís García, who might pitch one more time before the end of the season? What do you do with Brandon Belak if he even makes the roster? We still have to figure out what to do with Blake Taylor, who's supposed to come back Saturday, and who he's replacing on the active roster. Frankly, I don't have a real good handle on how many players are even allowed to be on a playoff roster in 2020 playoff palooza bubble world, whatever we're calling it. I'm sure it'll be brought to you by Duso, and we'll have graphics all over because there won't be any fans. Christian Javier is another one. He's been probably our best starter, most consistent starter all year long. He will have pitched once in 12 days, once in 9 days, excuse me. If he doesn't get in tonight, it'll be 10. Is he a starter or is he a bullpen guy? And if he's a bullpen guy, how would you throw him in a playoff game as a bullpen guy when he's not going to pitch on a consistent basis? It's mind numbing sometimes.
Yeah.
Trying to justify Dusty's decisions. And I'm certainly not qualified to do it.
I would say Dusty needs to start managing this season like the playoffs are a given and start putting these guys on a schedule. Doesn't matter what the situation is. Paredes, you're in there for the seventh, every second, every other day or something to get them used to. I don't think Seattle's not going to pass us in the race. I just don't see it happening. They're not ready for prime time. We're seeing that when they play teams with any degree of talent. But I do want to leave with one question then. You know, the one of the things that a lot of people, Daniel Cano, who you and our mutual friend, said to me in 18 that Lance McCullers Jr. will someday set the Astros record for saves. He has the mentality to be a closer, doesn't he?
I think he does. I think if you could convince him that his fastball and curveball are a good enough combination and he doesn't try to throw 3, 4, 5 different pitches, McCullers' issue is always that he overthinks himself and he can't seem to deal with any kind of crisis at all. So the idea of putting him in the closer role when, by and large, you are the fireman who's called in to put out crises, plural sometimes, that doesn't make me feel all warm and fuzzy. But from a stuff perspective and from a just, I'm going to let my man parts fly and I don't care what you think about me.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy you'd want. I don't think he's nasty enough from a Josh James is the guy who should be the closer. Josh James has a FU kind of attitude every time he takes the mound and he can throw 99 miles an hour and doesn't care where it goes. So if it's too far inside, he pitches up, he pitches away the, or to the strengths of the hitter sometimes, but he's got enough machismo or confidence or whatever you want to call it to do that and get away with it. He's a guy who also happens to be on more than 1 year of club control, which is another issue with McCullers.
Yeah.
That I would love to see get a shot as a closer if we could get him out of the idea that I'm going to be a starter, because he's not going to be a starter.
He's not going to be a starter. Before we go, the broadcast last night, Blum kept saying he liked the matchup with Oakland the best in the playoffs. I thought that sounded like pure insanity. What about you when you look at the three division winners Chicago, potentially Tampa Bay and Oakland, which matchup do you like the best?
I don't want to see Tampa Bay again, ever. The Astros.
Oh, Yankees, right?
I'd love to face the Yankees. Are a traditional baseball team. We can handle a traditional baseball team. The Astros cannot handle the Rays the way they pitch, and that's literally you might see nine different guys, mm-hmm. and they don't have a problem doing that. And their bullpen is so good and so deep that they can do that. And we don't adjust to that kind of stuff. Yep. And you're just it. You saw it. Against teams like the Rangers. We might see it today because we're going to face the mysterious Jordan Lyles, who has a 7-8 ERA, except against the Astros. But that's that kind of thing concerns me. Oakland concerns me less than that, but just barely. I don't think the White Sox are for real. I might be completely wrong. They could end up winning the World Series. I think the Twins actually will end up catching them, but that's a whole different thing.
The Fighting Andrew Nelsons, can we beat them?
Absolutely. I'll give Andrew a nod. I like the Twins. I got nothing against the Twins. Yeah. I think they're a team that has built their team the right way, even though I noticed Marwin Gonzalez gets no heat for being an Astro in 2017.
The one who cheated the most, by the way.
Exactly. But that's a neither here nor there. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that of the three that we could potentially get, I don't know that there's a better option. I would love it to be the Yankees because I think our team would actually get up to play the Yankees, and the Yankees still have it in the back of their head that these guys have knocked us out of the playoffs three of the last four opportunities, I should say.
Yeah.
Oakland scares me just because I think Oakland smells blood in the water with us. They're in our head. And
yeah.
The only good news I see is that in recent memory, Valdez, Greinke, and Urquidy have all had very good outings and are capable of shutting down an Oakland lineup. And Oakland's offense is a little bit worse than Chicago's, certainly, and some of the other potential.
Would Fiers pitch in that series, or do you think that he would be the game one starter for the division series?
Yeah, I think that
he's not their best pitcher.
No, he'd have to hold him back. For the potential ALDS, because somehow he's never going to face the Astros again.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
Very excited to welcome to the Who's On First segment, friend of the show, the general manager of the Sugarland Skeeters, Tyler Stamm, who is, by the way, our GM of the year. Now, Tyler, you're the GM of the Skeeters, but are you also like the commissioner of the Constellation League? Like, how does that go?
I don't know. We that was actually a conversation that we had, was do we need a commissioner? We kind of assumed, I think, that because these four teams were technically all our players, that we wouldn't run into issues that we normally do. Like with the Atlantic League, right? We have Rick White, who's the commissioner of the league, and he's able to handle these disputes between teams. And we thought, nah, it's never going to happen. But we did have some things that popped up, like, you know, so-and-so's doing this on that team. And we had some, I mean, the level of baseball was competitive.
Right.
Even in that first week, I had a bunch of players asking, like, who won the early game? Who won the late game last night? You know, so that, that kind of gives you an idea that people got into it and there were disputes between teams. So we kind of handled it as a group, I guess.
Yeah. It was funny. I was talking to when I went to, I think, my second game, Ryan Posner was telling me that, yeah, at first all the coaches were sort of laissez-faire about it, and then a mm-hmm. really good ball player came up and they were arguing over who got to have him. And I thought, that sounds like incredible, like a mixture of high quality pickup baseball.
Yeah, that happened. And even early on, a lot of guys were getting – it really started kind of as a spring training feel where guys were getting loose and just kind of getting back into the swing, where guys were really – it was all what the league was about was let's get this guy innings, let's get this guy ABs. And then towards the end, you saw moves by managers like within the game, like, oh, I want to go righty-righty, or I want to go lefty-lefty right here. So that
I think I saw a shift once. I was like, what's happening? Oh, man.
There were shifts. I mean, they got into it at the end.
Well, it was a great time. I think we made it out to four or five games. We brought a guy in from St. Louis to help cover one. It was such a blast. So I guess like evaluate the experiment. You know, you guys saw a problem, you saw a need, both, you know, I think culturally for baseball, but also the fact that it is a small business that has to have something coming in. Mm-hmm. How would you evaluate how it went and its success level?
So I think it would be, if I had to say a resounding success, I probably would, considering the circumstances. We thought that we'd probably have more fans than we ended up having. I think we averaged 1,200 tickets sold per game, which is still good, mm-hmm. Given that we created the league in 43 days.
Yeah.
But I think we thought we'd see a little bit more given that people wanted to get out of the house and we've been stuck in our homes. I mean, this thing started 6 months ago today. So it's like, it's been a while and we thought more people would come out, but we found that people are still cautious. And I think if you looked at the NFL, Kansas City allowed their fans in and they didn't even sell out of the tickets they had.
Oh,
there are a lot of people that are still cautious, but it's good to know that there are people still out there that just wanted to get away. But overall, super successful on that end, on the business side. Sponsors were happy. We were able, obviously, we called it the Constellation Energy League. That's our title sponsor. They're our naming rights partner for our building. So that was great. But on the baseball side, like we were talking about, it was good on the field. It was good to have guys like Roger Clemens, Greg Swindell was out here. I don't know if you saw, but he actually got a lightning sloth tattoo. He put that on Twitter today.
So Zeke, I haven't seen
he's got that on his body forever now. There's now seven guys or eight guys after today that are back with big league clubs right now, either on their taxi squad or on the big league roster. So overall, all in, it totally accomplished its job.
You know, I want to talk 2021 in the future and your plans, but let's go back to two elements of 2020. Let's talk about that first one. Mm-hmm. What's really cool, like for people out there, you and I know each other pretty good by now. We text really frequently.
Yep.
To see you legitimately jacked up for every one of your players, like Chase DeYoung that made it up to the Astros, what does that mean for you guys as an organization, both at a personal level, but also like for reputation of the league, to see so many, y'all were basically the only minor league club playing.
Yeah. It was really cool. I mean, just, I geeked out the other day. Obviously Chase, he had his first outing with the Astros during one of our games. So I didn't get to see it live, but he came into pitch and granted he didn't have great outings. But it was just so cool. I mean, for that to go from an email from the Astros to me texting Chase DeJong saying, hey, the Astros are looking at you. You need to get your agent in touch with him. The fact that I got to be involved even a little bit on a personal level is so cool. It was a great, great summer in that regard. Just getting guys like Brett Eibner back to the Marlins, getting Dermody to the Cubs, our league MVP is now back with the Rays where he belongs. So Ford Proctor, he's going to be in the bigs. Look out for him. He's like 24. I think he's only played high A so far, but that dude can rake. He hit 350 in this league. So,
yeah.
But
let me defend Chase DeYoung a little bit, because I think I was texting you during his first outing because you were running a game and he got Dusty Baker'd, because every single first inning he had was a good outing. And what he should have happened was he should have got patted on the butt and sent back to the dugout with a little bit of confidence. And instead he got brought out again. And Dusty's been doing that all season. But you're not my therapist, and this is not my Astros therapy section. But that's what that's been like all year.
It's okay. It's been a tough year for you guys, man. The fact that Chase is even there, it kind of shows how decimated you guys have been. But, no, I remember looking back, though, he let a couple guys on in his first outing, and then he got pulled. He didn't get a chance to get him off base. But, it is what it is. That's the game.
But one of the things that I thought was really cool, and this is what I think, where I think indie baseball rules and minor league baseball rules and where you guys are the top of that heap, is you really do take a very macro community look. And I take this from one of the press releases I got was y'all were really proud at how safe you were. The COVID mm-hmm. numbers were insane. Talk a little bit about just how hard that was, why it was so important. And I do think it's something you should have been really proud of.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that. And I told you, I think, when you were out here during the game, I didn't really care this year if people said, oh, I had a great time or that was a great ball game. I wanted them to leave saying I felt safe. And I got that all the time, all throughout the year. I tell you, man, I had panic attacks and like could not sleep before the season started because as a person, I didn't know, hey, like, is this okay? Is what I'm participating in and what I'm building with our team okay? Is this going to get people sick? And I can tell you resoundingly, no. after we went through it. It was handled extremely well. The last 5 or 6 weeks of our season, we had zero positive cases downstairs in the clubhouses, which if you had told me that going into it, I would have not believed you. I would have bet any amount of money against that.
Yeah.
But we did it, and we were testing every week. We tested our front office staff whenever they wanted it, and we just weren't testing positive. And we were always just keeping people's masks on. We were, you know, just vigilant about it. And I think that's the key is if you just follow these safety and health guidelines that the government and CDC has issued, everybody can move on from this. And we still obviously need to be cautious and follow these guidelines, but it can be done.
One of the things that came out of that were two of the best brands in baseball, the Lightning Sloth and the Eastern Tigres de... I messed it all up.
Reyes del Tigre.
There you go. In fact, to the point that a shout out to Emily Nyman, who runs the very popular Breaking Balls pod out of New York, has said that it is my mission to get a shirt for her. So I will be hitting up the shop when we're done with this. But
there you go.
Do you think we'll see any of that? Like as the Skeeters go forward, will be to some throwback nights and all that fun stuff?
There could be. We've talked about it. You know, when you talk about a what could have been night that you see, MILB does the Copa de Diversión.
Yeah.
Do the Spanish names. I mean, stuff like that where I think in year one, we did the Sugarland War Chickens. You could definitely see an homage to that going forward where we're the Sugarland Reyes del Tigre. Why not?
Why not? So let's talk about this. You're a real smart guy. You're a bright guy. You're always learning. What did you learn about yourself and your team from this season that you're going to be able to put into play as you move forward?
This is kind of broad, but that we can do anything. That's truly how I feel at this point, that the fact that we created a league, and granted, it's not the same. There's a lot more that goes into a like full normal season with promos and things on the field and just everything's beefier, I guess. And this was scaled back, but the fact that it went from nothing to a league with 120 players and four managers and during a pandemic in 43 days, I truly feel like we can do anything. So with this group we have here, if you throw anything at us, we're going to accomplish it. That's what I learned this year, for sure.
And top notch, because you did pull off promos. You did pull off that. I know that, like, I know that you thought it was scaled. I know you thought it was scaled back, but I will tell you, compared to all the other visits, y'all were the only ones who even tried. And I think, Round Rock did a couple, but that y'all were the only ones who really tried. And I think that matters. You know, as we look at 2021, I want to, you know, there's a lot that can happen. We all know the political landscape of where baseball's heading, but from the pandemic specific, how do you guys plan? Do you plan 2021? We might still have to have seating capacity limitations, or do you plan for, I mean, do you now have to just plan for any possibility?
100%. And that's already started. So now that we're kind of back in the office full swing, some of us, at least, we're still working from home a little bit, but yeah, we're probably going to create budgets for socially distanced pandemic or socially distanced non-pandemic. It's just kind of the nature of the beast at this point. You just got to be ready for anything, because who knows? I mean, no one saw this coming. It's impossible to see. So I would be shocked, honestly, if we weren't in some form of socially distanced setup again next year. I'm going to guess that we'll for sure have masks in place. I'll be shocked if that's not a thing either. But we'll see. Who knows? I know that we're going to be able to build off of what we've already done. So we definitely leg up, and there will be less planning, I guess, needed in that regard, because we already have done it before, and we will not be new to operating in a pandemic next year, which is nice.
Yeah, I suspect the same. I suspect that there will be more baseball countrywide, but it will be at capacity limits and
different. It's going to be different.
And different. So I guess as we wrap up then, I mean, you know, you guys are not done. You guys a lot planning for 2020. I saw something about the USC fight. You have the Christmas thing. What can we look forward to out of Constellation Field for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so we are running and gunning. We've got next Friday, the 25th of September, we're doing Centerfield Cinema. We're going to do Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 2. You can sit out on the Centerfield grass and watch a movie on our brand new video board. The next night, we're doing the UFC 253 watch party, so you can do that. We're going to be doing both of those throughout the off season. So UFC's like one a month. We'll probably do movies one or two times a month. And then we'll do some festivals that are private events. And then we'll just jump straight into Holiday Lights in November. And we're going to crush the Christmas time, and then we're going to be in January, and who knows? 2021, here we go.
Here we go. Well, Tyler, again, thank you so much. Congratulations for being our GM of the year. Thanks so much. You're very welcome. You're in your team, that you really set an example, and I know that it's hard work, and I know nose to the grindstone, it's hard to not see forests and trees, but you guys are the best out there. And if there's anything we can do, you know, please don't hesitate. And thank you so much for being on Let's Get To and being a big part of my baseball journey.
Well, man, that means a lot. Thanks so much for doing what you do. The fact that you're still, I think I cannot find one, a podcaster that has been going around to minor league parks all summer, this summer, given the landscape and the fact that you're just keeping baseball alive yourself too. I think that's awesome, dude.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
So that does wrap us up. We're going to be back. We have some really cool episodes coming up for the next couple of weeks to give you a real insight into some of the other sides of living that baseball life, and really more directly that minor league baseball life that I'm not sure a lot of people really have really kind of explored. So we're very excited about that. We do hope that everybody has a great weekend, that everybody gets a chance to relax. It looks like the numbers are trending down. Maybe we're getting a little close to normalcy. I do want to send a shout out to Stu Clary, to my daughter Jordan, and everybody in the Pacific Northwest and Northern California. Hope you're staying safe. Stay inside. The air quality thing is no joke, so definitely watch that. You know, there's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions on the expanded playoffs. Scott and I shared ours, which are kind of aligned. Whatever you think about them for 2021 and beyond, in 2020, there's a lot of teams still in the mix. So enjoy that. Enjoy being in the pennant race. You know, there's about 12 games to go. So I hope that your team does well. I hope your team keeps moving. But again, enjoy the weekend. Stay safe, stay sane. And until next time, let's get to it.